Food Bank by Dylan Keeling. Read by Nicola Rumigam. She had known before they ordered a thing that tonight was the end. He'd begun to shout at her that week, to interrupt her and to comment on what she should wear, but they took their seats near the riverside view of the London skyline, and she decided, vengefully, not to end it until he'd paid for one more meal. She made it an expensive one. Three of the priciest starters, the stuffed lobster, a truffle salad side dish, the cheese board to finish, and her sadistic pièce de résistance. The most luxurious wine on the menu, nearly £900. She savoured every mouthful of it, relishing the taste of his evaporating money, before considering him a few moments. His shirt was pink and very smooth. His face was ageing into bitterness, though she had found it attractive at first. "I've been thinking," she said carefully, "about us." "Oh," he sighed, "where's this going, sweetheart?" The woman made a valiant, a heroic attempt to look apologetic. The maliciousness inside her could not be allowed to show for a moment. It's not working at all, darling. I'm sorry." 45 minutes later, she was standing at a random corner, one of the strange collisions in London between posher houses and the edge of a crumbling estate. It was night, and as she waited for the cab she had called to this strangely familiar address, the word he had spat rang in her ears. "Bitch." "Bitch? And why not?" With a glow of pride and a full belly, she smirked at the name. A bitch was nobody you wanted to mess around with. A bitch was someone who got an expensive meal for free and went coldly, smugly home alone. Perhaps because of this confidence, when the diminutive figure moved away from the undergrowth towards her, surprising her, nonetheless a weary, terrible part of her nodded inside. "Okay, bring it on. This is what happens to people like me in places like this." So as the boy casually, oh so casually, came to confront her under the lonely streetlight, the woman's heart pounded. But at the same time, she felt ready, fortified by plonk and rich seafood. The boy, from his small hoodie, only asked, "You all right? Are you lost?" But all the woman heard was menace. She rooted in her handbag for cigarettes, hoping to seem unbothered. The wine surged in her bloodstream, making her fingers clumsy. "Maybe I can help you," he proffered, eyes dull. She scanned the empty street as she lit a cigarette. "Most certainly not," she replied. "Where was the taxi?" "Have you just been to a restaurant?" At this, she frowned at him. "What I eat is none of your business." "Yeah," he bit his lip and clapped his hands together. "You know there's been murders round here?" "Of course." Quickly, like a startled cat, she looked again at the estate name. She had heard it in the news 3 times this year. "What do you know about murders?" she demanded.
"I know how they did them," he sounded frightened.
It was not clear where the conversation would go or end up. She was beginning to soften towards him, this scared little boy, when a sound of clanking, the deliberate striking of metal against metal in an echoic space, changed everything. The boy jumped, startled, said a single high-pitched sentence, then turned and hurried away to a staircase on the estate, the woman left standing. He had said, "It's my brother!" She would have simply turned away, relieved, except that the banging continued, and she thought, or imagined, another sound, a high-pitched, rather feeble keening like an animal being tortured. This wail accompanied the new sound of someone apparently kicking a metal fence at the base of the stairs and hissing, "Would you shut the fuck up, you cockroach?" Unable to decipher what was happening, the woman found herself pulled nearer, compelled to explore as if dreaming. She picked up the pace, and when the boy's voice called out, "Kim, she's coming! Stop it!" then slowed at the corner to take in the view. Underneath the stone staircase was a dark corner, fenced off for maintenance storage. A small figure,
a little girl, was inside this fenced area, hitting the mesh with a small closed hunting knife held upside down. Her eyes were wide and terrified, and a furious older boy, a skinhead in a fraying pullover, kicked again at the outside of the mesh, seriously rattling it. The girl retreated, whining, between some storage tanks and a rusting porter's trolley. On seeing the woman come nearer, the younger boy seemed to twitch with a flash of fear. "Kim!" he alerted the older boy, who turned and saw her. For a moment, the skinhead examined the child behind bars again, taking in how it must look. Then he glanced nervously back at the woman, whose rage at what she saw was overwhelming her fear, and fumbled in his pocket. Before the woman could reach him, the skinhead produced a key. He inserted it skillfully into the gate's padlock, twisted it, unhooked the padlock, and then with a shifty glance, ditched the padlock on the stone ground and grabbed the younger boy, pulling him away. They scarpered, and the woman surprised herself by throwing her lit cigarette at their fleeing backs. "What's wrong with you?" she shouted, her voice bouncing back off the brick. "You foul boys!" Turning back, she saw the girl wore a wretched T-shirt that still said "Bling" in faded letters and a haunted stare. "Are you all right?" she asked, opening the gate. The trembling girl raised a hand and the woman's mouth went dry at the state of the girl's wrist. She was so thin. The wrist was like a shrink-wrapped bone, the hand unnaturally large. Her eyes were deep sunken and her cheekbones sharp and almost white. The poor mite was about 6 and skeletal. "Hello," the woman greeted her, bending down. "What's your name?" The girl just stared. "My name," the woman offered, "is Sandra." Then she hesitated. "You can call me Sandy. That's what my sister used to call me. Are you cold?" But what a stupid question. Of course the girl must be cold. Sandy looked at her fur coat and then, unwillingly, slipped it off and wrapped it round the girl's bloodless shoulders. "Did they lock you in there?" she asked. And now the girl responded a brief, miserable nod. Sandy licked her lips, concerned, thinking. "Do you live in one of the flats around here?" Another nod. The little girl pointed a spindly finger up the stairs. Sandy glanced up, then nodded, making a snap decision. "I'll take you home." She was leading the girl to the staircase, marvelling at the thinness of her, when suddenly the girl gripped Sandy's elbow tightly and pointed into the open courtyard, where a mist had begun to coalesce. At first, Sandy heard and saw nothing, certainly nothing to justify the girl's moaning and frantic tugging at her arm. Then she saw them. The boys had returned, but with others. Sandy had an instant heart-stopping vision of 6 or 7 figures, male, female, all kids, running at them from out of the mist. One shouted with incoherent rage. Another, a female voice, called out, "Fuck you, bitch!" And the little girl was off, scampering up the stairs in terror, wearing Sandy's coat. No time to get her phone out, no time to hesitate. Clutching her handbag in a death grip, Sandy ran up the stairs after the girl, who hesitated on the second landing to let her catch up. As they ran further up together, Sandy wondered at the silence. On one floor, the door at the end of the hall shut just as they passed. "Hey!" she cried out, lungs bursting. But the girl had run on, and the others were still in pursuit, so she quickly gave up and continued. Where were the parents of these kids, the authority figures? Where was anyone? Several flats had boarded up doors and windows, and plants had died in pots in most of the halls. One flat on the third floor seemed to have had half its contents chucked out on the walkway, broken bedstead and grease-spotted duvet and all. In all her life, Sandy had never run so hard, never felt such mounting terror. She found herself wondering what a childhood like this would have made of her, and even, for some reason, thinking of the suicidal insanity of the human innards when denied sustenance for too long. She remembered hearing somewhere that the body, in starvation, began eating itself, the digestive system literally consuming the meat of the organs, closely pressing against it on all sides. And she almost began to visualise what, if anything, would be the result on the human mind. Almost. Instead, as she reached the fifth floor, the starving little girl she was fleeing with turned to her and with great seriousness pointed left at a door a few yards down the hall.
"Your home?"
she panted.
"Mm-mm,"
the girl nodded, catching her own breath with difficulty. They went to the door and Sandy started collecting her thoughts. There would be a parent here. She could use her phone, get help, backup. She drew deep breaths as the girl knocked, preparing herself to speak. But the door opened and all she saw was a family of children with shattered faces and staring eyes, filthy, sodden rags on their backs reaching for her. About 5 kids, all under 10, all as stick thin as the victim who had led her here. The victim who was now pushing her into their grubby, clutching hands. As they pulled her down, as they ripped at her clothes with ragged nails, Sandy thrashed with her arms and kept trying to wriggle free. But she was outnumbered by the hands undoing her clothes, working her high-heeled shoes off, pulling her blouse over her head, yanking harshly at her bra. She missed the moment her ringing phone got smashed. She was shrieking, her naked back scraping the floor, watching the skinhead pat the little girl approvingly on the shoulder of Sandy's fur coat.
"Nice plan, girl," he pronounced. "Worked a treat."
The little girl silently opened the hunting knife. When a kick pounded into Sandy's belly, some of the rich, expensive lobster dinner inside spurted back up to her throat and tongue. But the little girl paid no attention. She was sawing off the front half of Sandra's right foot. Sandy thought hysterically,
"So this, my death, she won't even speak to me."
But as the little girl turned the severed hunk of foot, toenail downwards, and raised the fleshy, bloodied inner part to her open mouth, she momentarily caught Sandy's expiring gaze. And her eyes narrowed. "Hello, food bank," she said.